This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Kelly, and I'm incredibly proud to be an Over the Influence community member. When I became a member, I got a double dose of the podcast every week, now that I had access to the premium pod, and I also loved the in-person Zoom calls, basically just getting to know like-minded people. Personally, it's been just over a year since I changed my relationship with alcohol, and I've honestly never felt better. My head is clearer, my relationships with friends and family members are better, and overall in life I just have way more energy. Thankfully, I never had a rock bottom, but Over the Influence made me realise I didn't need one. It's never too late to change for the better. So thanks for being there for me, OTI, and keep up the great work.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. I say it every single week because I mean it. Thank you so much for listening. It really is marvellous to have you here. If you are maybe completely alcohol-free, sober curious, teetotal, however you want to describe yourself, you are more than welcome here. There are literally squillions of episodes to go at. Go back. Fill your boots. We sing about sobriety very, very loudly from the rooftops. If you are maybe listening for the very first time, please allow us to give us a quick reintroduction as to who we are. If you are listening for the first time, it will be an introduction because you don't know who we are. I'm going off on a tangent. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in in Lancashire in the northwest of England. In September this year, I'll be 5 years alcohol-free, which is nothing short of bonkers. I decided to take a break from booze back end of summer in 2018. And then something really weird happened. Everything just started to fall into place. Life got better. It wasn't crap like I thought it would be. Turns out drinking is actually quite crap, or at least it was for me. Fell head over heels in love with sobriety, and we want to sing about it weekly. In fact, we do, from the rooftops. It's why Over the Influence exists, and it's why our amazing community exists. So that's me in a very short nutshell. I don't do it on my own, as you know. Ben Anderson, how the hell are you?
I'm good, Sharon. In less than 1 month, I'll be 3 years alcohol-free.
Hell, can't believe to it. The yes! Flip!
Yeah, it's one of the great things about doing like getting to 1,000 days is that very quickly another big milestone comes along, which is 3 years. So yeah, chuffed about that.
You know what?
And I decided sorry.
No, yeah. I just remember your first month like it was yesterday.
Yeah, it feels like that. It has actually flown. Like, I mean, it's that classic thing, isn't it? At the time, especially at the beginning, felt quite slow. At the beginning, but then it just speed up, doesn't it? It just becomes part of who you are. For me, I was a binge drinker, so I didn't drink every day, but when I did go out, I'd really go for it, and it wouldn't take much to kind of twist my arm. I'd go to the pub for one or two after work, and then someone would go on, stay for three or four or five or six or seven or eight, and I'd go, yeah,
nine
go
or
on
ten.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think I had an alcohol problem meaning being physically dependent on alcohol, but alcohol did cause me problems that aren't there now that I no longer drink. And it's all the classic stuff for me. Relationships improve, more confidence in myself. In fact, there's something that I'm really, there's a line from our guest's book today that I can't wait to ask her about, which is about that kind of realigning with kind of who you are and what you want. Anyway, Sharon, it's your job to do our big intros, and you get cross when I take over. So
I don't.
Back to you.
You just don't. Well, when you've done them in the past, you don't do them as well as I do.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Of course. I jest.
Yeah, this podcast, it is all about our guest, and it gives us great pleasure this week to introduce Meg Geiswhite, who is in Delaware in the United States of America. You know, the first thing I've got to say, Meg, is that I'm just chuffed a bit as the time difference worked. Myself and Ben were pretty diabolical when it comes to other time zones in the world. So I'm so glad we're all here. Meg, welcome.
Very professional, though, Meg. Very professional.
Welcome to Over the Influence.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
Can I dive in, Chaz?
You're dying to do this. You know what? I'm going to sit back.
I am.
Yeah, go for it.
I've been really enjoying the book. And, you know, we'll ask you to tell us all about it shortly. I'm in chapter four. at the moment, Meg. Okay. And there's a sentence that's really stood out to me. Chapter 4 is called Being Sober is Boring, in inverted commas. And the sentence that I really, really like in this chapter, I was no longer willing to abandon myself to please even my own husband. You talk about sex, Meg.
I do.
We are very British, and we are not used to people being so open about things like that, Meg.
Yeah, you know, I had heard from a lot of people, which I believe this is true, that sex is better when you're sober. And that is true, right? We're more aware of our surroundings. But for me, I felt very alone because I felt like all of the intimacy connections were unconnected. Like they needed to find new outlets, new connections, because when I drank, I'll just say it, I was a little bit, you know, inebriated, a little bit less inhibited with my husband. And so when that was gone, it felt a little bit different for me. And at night, especially in early sobriety, I was tired. I was getting up earlier and I was really kind of feeling all the feels. And so at the end of the day, all systems were shutting down. And so I had to go to my husband and tell him, this has nothing to do with you. I love you. This means nothing about our relationship other than I am healing from the inside out. And this is going to take time. And so we had to find new rhythms because our marriage really centered around alcohol. We met when we were drinking. We loved to entertain, have a good time. You know, after we would put the kids to bed, we would have several glasses of wine together. It was our connection time. And now he had joined me on my journey, which I know doesn't happen for a lot of people. But for both of us, we were shifting at the same time. The very thing that was at the center of connection for us was gone. And so we had to find new ways of connection, new rhythms. And, you know, I told him, I said, it may be that we need to go to bed earlier to have those moments, because I really was honoring my mind, body, and spirit. And unfortunately, in the book, in that chapter, we were going through these shifts and we were having some marital issues. I think a lot of people experience this early on too, where things that never really bothered them and are now coming to the surface because there isn't anything there numbing it anymore. And so we were seeing a marriage counselor, and she, I don't know if you read this part then, but she had said,
I did.
You know, I would encourage you to go green when you feel like you're on yellow with sex. And I was stunned. That was the last session with her. But I realized in that moment that I was no longer willing to abandon myself to please everybody else around me. And in this journey, that has come up several times, because as a past people pleaser, there were so many times where I would just want to make everybody feel good in the moment and take on the role as the caretaker, the planner, whatever it was that I felt like I had to do to make everybody else feel happy and comfortable. But then what I would do was drink that regret down, you know, with a glass of wine, like I deserve this. You know, look at me, I took care of everybody else. But what ended up happening, and through one of my other therapy sessions, I realized I had become dutiful yet dead. I was serving everybody else's needs but my own. And that was a wake-up call for me. And it wasn't until I quit drinking that I started to ask myself, who is Meg? Not Meg as a mother, not as a sister, not as, you know, a wife, but who am I? And the healing journey, which is the end of the book, and I know you're not quite there yet, Ben, but really is about listening to our inner knowing and listening and trusting that sixth sense, that intuition, that alcohol corroded completely for me. And I'm no longer ever willing to allow anything to come between me and that connection, that spiritual connection to my inner knowing, who is always guiding me back to myself and to the truth. And when you talk about alignment, it is a thing every day where I'm taking a mind, body, and spirit temperature gauge. And is this in alignment with who Meg is and what I want for my life? When I could never do that when I was drinking.
Amazing. This talk so early on in the episode of sex and rhythms, I can't go there. My kids might be listening,
Shaz,
but I can't.
I'm getting married in the summer, and I'm not getting married to you or Meg. Do you know what I mean? And we're British. Like, we don't talk about this kind
We don't.
in all seriousness, though, I love that as a quote. I was no longer willing to abandon myself. And I think that's such a... I know that we're giggling like teenagers here because you said the word sex, which is ridiculous. Sharon, we're grown
Stop.
Adults.
Sorry.
We
it's
both
fine.
Have children.
I've got three. I need three times.
Three times. I've only done it once. But I love that kind of that set. It applies to so many different aspects, as you've just been talking about there, that kind of people pleasing. It's not just about the kind of the people who are closest to you in your life, is it? It's everyone. We talk about this so much, this kind of desperation that we all have to just be liked by everyone. The people we don't even care about, Meg. Like, it's mad. It's madness.
It really is maddening. And I feel like the alcohol-free journey forces you to get comfortable with the uncomfortable and to be in the minority. And believe it or not, I'm 3.5 years alcohol free and I just had a first, which I can't believe I'm still experiencing firsts 3.5 years later, but I just went to a wedding this past weekend. And my husband and I were the only people there not drinking and, cheersing with the glasses of water. And you feel like for that moment, odd woman out, right? Like kind of odd person out at the table. But I'm so proud of my sobriety now. I really want it for everyone to know that there is so much more joy at the wedding. I found myself smiling and beaming for the bride and groom with pure happiness and joy versus trying to figure out where my next drink was from the bar. I was looking at all the flowers and they were like technicolor and beautiful. And then I went out on the dance floor and just danced my ass off and had the best time. And, it's like that fun little girl who had fun before alcohol is still in there and she's just waiting for you to rescue her. It's an intoxicating lie. And that's the fourth chapter is the fourth lie in my book. So I have five intoxicating lies that I go through in my book. And the fourth one is that being sober is boring. And in fact, this was the best wedding I had ever been to. Everything was like amped up and more beautiful. And I was so present in the moment for them and felt great the next day, And so it just is this societal lie and belief that life is more boring. And I talk about in my book, go back to when you were a little girl, what brought you joy? For me, it was riding my bike and my pigtails flying in the wind and the joy that I would feel riding my bike. It was being out in nature. I used to play in creeks and like clean up the creeks. And I love being in nature. I find it so healing. I love to paint as a little girl. And recently I've taken a painting class where it's a watercolors class. It was for 2 hours every Monday and I have a full-time job and two kids. And I was like, oh my God, why did I sign up for this? I have no time for this. But I was so glad I did because when I got into the class and I immersed myself in those watercolors, my to-do list went away. The little girl inside of me came alive with joy. And my girlfriend and I had the best time together at this painting class. There was no alcohol involved. We were laughing and giggling and just having utter joy. And so it's all there waiting for us.
Oh, everything you've just said there, you've just taken me back to when I was a little girl. So I also had pigtails riding my bike. I also loved nature. I used to think I was a little bit of a... not a diva, what would the word be? Just a little bit extra. I like being on the stage and things like that. I like the lead in the school play. All this was completely dulled. All of it was dulled and, I drank over it for many, many years. And then guess what happened when I removed the booze? This time last year, I was on the stage in Calendar Girls with my local Amdram group, having the time of my absolute life. One thing I used to love doing as a child also, like you mentioned about the nature, was getting into the mountains. I can't do enough of that now. It's truly and utterly wonderful. And it's so hard sometimes to try and explain to people that if you make this one choice, this one decision, doesn't have to be forever. Let's forget about forever for now. Let's just talk about a decent chunk of time, 100 days. You can peel back these layers and you can uncover who you are. Because we all used to enjoy life before alcohol appeared, didn't we? We had an absolute ball as kids.
Yeah.
And it's still there. It doesn't go away. It is still there beneath it all, Meg.
I post on Instagram, my handle is Intoxicating Lies Book. And every day, and again, I don't believe in absolute perfection. So again, it may not happen every day. But most days I post on my walks, find the beauty in the day. So it might be a flower, it might be a sunset, it might be a rock. I actually collect rocks in the shape of hearts. And so when I find them,
I don't collect them, I give them to Jem. Yeah, yeah. It's like it's been like a running theme over. I think on our very first holiday we went on, I found a heart rock on the beach. And so yeah, we've got a collection of them too.
Oh, I love that. And so to me, it feels like the universe, or, you know, it's a God wink where it's saying you are held and loved and love wins. And so I have a huge jar of heart rocks with love wins on it.
Oh, I'm going to start that now. You two, just stop. I'm going to have to start it.
But I feel like sometimes in the alcohol-free journey, it can be a lot of inner work that we're doing, a lot of hard things that come up because we're no longer having something to numb out. So it is critical that we find these moments of gratitude and joy because they are soul fulfilling. And when I'm in nature and I see these signs, like I believe in spirit animals as well, I feel like it's always telling me, I have your back. What you're doing is right. You know, I see angel numbers all the time too. And I'm just this, when I was drinking, every day was a slight shade of gray. And so it just kind of was always working like a slight hangover, never really seeing what I see now. And it's this awe and wonder and magic that when you're drinking just isn't there because you're so in tune with that connection that I'm talking about to your inner knowing, to the earth, like we're all one, right? And so I'm not willing to do anything that is going to alter my brain or alter anything to come in between that connection because it is pure magic.
Why did you decide to make the choice to be completely, fully alcohol-free 3.5 years ago? We should have done this at the beginning, by the way, Meg, but we got carried away.
It just went straight in with the sex.
Bedrooms.
Start with the joy because really, honestly, there is so much joy in this alcohol-free journey. But back when I was drinking, I'll tell you, I'm a big proponent of therapy. I talk about it a lot in my book, but I had some not so great therapists. So I had a therapist who I had finally worked up the courage to tell her I think I might have a drinking problem because I felt very stuck in this detox to retox loop. I was never drinking during the day. There was never a DUI or there was never any external consequences, but I just felt like I was in this maddening Groundhog's Day of always coming home and my self-care was, and it's the first lie I talk about in my book, I deserve a drink. And when she told me, no, I don't think you have a drinking problem, she kept that ill advice, kept my gray area drinking going for 2 more years. Back to the inner knowing, how my book ends, is that it wasn't until I listened to that inner knowing who was pleading with me, something is not right here. This is not serving us. You know, day in and day out, I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, but I could only ever willpower and sheer willpower my way through 2 weeks. Now I know it takes 2 weeks to get alcohol out of my system. So it was right about when it would get out that I would go back and drink again because I was not in a community. I didn't have the tools. I was trying to do it on my own. And what scared me was, when I no longer wanted my kids to do sports in the evening so that I could come home to my rewarding glass of wine, that scared me because I'm somebody who likes to be in control. I'm a type A. I'm the oldest in my family. I'm an Enneagram 1, the perfectionist. You know, I like to get things done and get it right. And when I no longer felt in control. My inner knowing was kind of sending off that alarm. You better check this out. You better explore this. So I finally clicked on an ad after I had kind of been looking at it for several months for a community called SoberSys. And I thought, you know what? I'll just do a 21-day reset. This is our instant gratification culture and society where we think we can be fixed in a hot 21 days. And I thought, oh, I'll just get a few tools under my tool belt and go back to being a so-called normal drinker, whatever that means, right? And when I got into this program, I thought it would be me and maybe three other women because I felt very alone in this. Everybody was telling me my drinking looked just like theirs, that it was normal. And there were thousands of women in this group. And I thought, why are there so many women here? And that made me even more curious. And I'm in pharmaceutical sales, so I love science. And I started reading This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And then I started realizing, oh my God, what am I ingesting? Why am I having a toxin with my kale salad? Why am I using a depressant to celebrate? I started asking myself all these questions. And I started feeling better after that 21 days. So I decided to go into, I did Annie Grace's This Naked Alcohol Experiment. So then I did 60 days, still feeling really good. So then I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for 100 days. Let's see what happens at 100 days. At that 100 days, it really started to shift for me in my brain. It really, I think it's good we have these challenges, these 30-day challenges and dry Januaries to get people curious. And it's exactly what brought me in. But to be honest with you, it wasn't until around 100 days that things really started to shift for me. And this new feeling of understand what there is to go back to. What is this providing for my life? I couldn't find one good thing that it was adding to my life. It was only taking. And I started to realize that we use alcohol as either a reward or a crutch. And in that are five intoxicating lies. And so my book opens up with the intoxicating lies we tell ourselves about our self-worth. And then really our hustle culture, which kind of tells us that we're not good enough. And it's something that I told myself, and I have a lot of stories in my book I won't get into, but you know, I deserved a drink. That's probably the number one lie I hear from women when I talk to communities is I deserved it. I deserve a drink. I've earned it. Wine has become the opioid for women. It's really become like this really crappy consolation prize for giving ourselves for self-care. I don't know if you want me to go into the other lies in my book.
You know what? I would love you to. And I'd also, before you do, I'd like to ask this question, because these intoxicating lies are, as you say, it's the lies that we tell ourselves, but they are lies that have been kind of constructed through societal narratives, you know. And we talk about this a lot on Over the Influence. How much do we drink because it's just what you do in that situation? How much do we drink because you feel like you have to, because that's what everybody does? Before we start drinking, definitely at 18, Sharon, wasn't it for us at 18?
That's
the legal
18.
Age here in the United
before.
Kingdom. But you've watched drinking culture as a child growing up for years and years and years. What I'm getting to here is these intoxicating lies. I suppose, do you hope almost that your book becomes out of date? Like, do you hope that someone reads this in, you know, 50 years' time, and it's in rather than it kind of being something that they can apply, that it's almost like a piece of history?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking about this before I came on here, and I thought the reason why I wrote the book and I became sober curious in 2019, I could not find anything about gray area drinking at the time. And at that time, it was a black and white box, right? You either take it or leave it drinker on occasion, or you were a so-called alcoholic and stage drinker. I had no idea that on the alcohol use disorder spectrum, that there was even a category in the medical literature called gray area drinking. And they say you write the book that you couldn't find at the time. And so I felt this invitation to from the universe saying, you have got to get this message out. I'm not a writer. I'm just an ordinary mom. Like I said, I'm in sales. I had to go through all the limiting beliefs of like, who are you to write a book? You don't have a platform. But I felt at the time, like this message has got to get out. This space, we've got to talk about gray area drinking because it's so vast. There are so many people trapped in it. The pandemic increased drinking 43% in women because they're trying to juggle the house, trying to juggle online schooling and work and everything. And it was just too much. And so I hope, because I think about it now in 2023, gray area drinking is mentioned so often. There are groups that are just specifically for gray area drinkers now. And it's a term that a lot of people are familiar with. Is there still a lot of room for education? There sure is. But like you said, my hope is that, yeah, my book is like, oh yeah, we know about gray area drinking. I wrote it because at the time I couldn't find one book that was discussing what it was, how to identify if you think you have it. And I have a whole chapter, as you know, Ben, right on what is gray area drinking. And I'm not here to diagnose anybody, but I feel like if we don't talk about all the shades of gray in between, people are going to be like, oh, I'm not that bad. And we label each other up to make ourselves feel better about our drinking. Whether you're always going to find somebody who drinks more than you, right? You always will. What matters is not the amount, but what is it providing for your life? How is that inner knowing feeling about it? And I'm just so grateful I listened to my inner knowing, because society and culture and even my own therapist, everybody was telling me, keep going. You're doing fine. You're winning awards at work. Your marriage is great. But inside, internally, I was suffering and like, why am I felt so alone. And I think that's what books are made for, is to help other people feel seen. I've had so many women reach out to me and say, your story is my story. I needed this permission slip to heal or to explore my relationship with alcohol or to quit drinking. And that was the mission of the book.
We are just going to take a really quick break from this fabulous chat with the lovely Meg Geiswhite from Delaware in the US of Actual A. Loads more to come with Meg very, very shortly. But before we do, Ben, I've got something to report.
Okay, great.
We have had an influx of members.
Yes, we have.
In the community.
Isn't
it fabulous?
It is so,
so
lots of new joiners.
God, from all over the world. It's really, really cool. And you know what? It warms my cockles so much. One, because people have gone, you know what? I'm going to try this. And I've had a lot of messages from people saying, can I ask you a few more questions? What's it going to be like? Will it be okay? I'm like, come in and see for yourself. Just have a try. The welcome that our members get, our new members from our OGs. It's off the scale, isn't it? It's so, so good.
Yeah. If you're wondering what we're on about, basically, it's the AV The Influence community. It's where, you know, you can join the conversation about alcohol-free life. There's forum boards, which you kind of post on. There's Zoom calls that you can join, which are amazing. There's a member messenger function, so you can do one-to-one chat with people who are like-minded, who are alcohol-free and doing it. It's just brilliant. It's just the best place to be. And you know what? Just give it a try. And if it's not for you, then it's 20 quid a month.
Celebrate.
And there's no contract. No obligation. Just give us a try and see if you like it. Come and join us, because loads and loads of people, Sharon, are deciding to have a sober summer.
A sober summer. Well, the thought of a sober summer for me 5 years ago was horrific. It was truly, truly awful. But I grabbed the bull by the horns and I went for it. And you know what now? Summer is a gift.
It's the best time to be alcohol-free.
It's so good.
You know, it's the best time to be alcohol-free for me for two reasons. The first one, it's the lighter nights and the lighter mornings. So you've actually got the kind of energy to get up and enjoy it in the morning. You're not kind of sloshed and wasting your time sitting in a pub at night time. But also, there's nothing worse than a hot hangover. Oh, my God.
Oh,
don't miss them. One of the worst hangovers of my life. I woke up in like a sticky mess, feeling horrible, went to put the fan on and the fan went,
Oh, God.
And broke. And I was
Oh,
God. What do I do? In fact, it's taking me back. We need to move on from this. It's taking me back there now to that hot, hellish room.
I bet you can smell it. I bet you can taste it. Right, enough. Take it from myself and Ben, who have been there and done it many, many summers, for many summers, many, many pints, many glasses of rosé. No more. A sober summer is a treat. Like Ben's just said there, you get the light mornings, the beautiful longer nights. It's a game changer. How many times do I use that term? It's a game changer. Isn't alcohol-free life brilliant? Because it is. Come and see for yourself anyway. Maybe just get a feel for the community. Dip in. Come and say hello. Like Ben said, no obligation. You're not tied into Jack. Squat, nothing at all. I nearly swore then. I mean, that would be very unprofessional, wouldn't it?
You can find it's so unlike us as well.
We've never done that before on the podcast. You can find all the information on the website, which is overtheinfluence.co.uk. Or if you've got any questions in particular that you'd like us to answer, just drop us an email. Honestly, send it direct to me, Sharon@overtheinfluence.co.uk, and I promise we will get back and answer any questions that you might have. Let's get back to the episode with Meg.
Shall we talk about the other intoxicating lies then? Just think, you know, with Over the Influence, our mission here is really simple, and it's to normalise sobriety as a lifestyle, positive lifestyle choice, isn't it, Shaz? That's what we've decided on.
Right? I think so. Sounds good.
in the same way that kind of, you know, you get a pat on the back when you give up cigarettes, you know, we want that to be kind of the same way that alcohol is viewed. And Shaz, I think, you know, we also say we're going to do this podcast every week for the rest of time.
It's a long time.
But we hope that one day that we feel like it's not needed anymore, don't we? Because it's just, oh, you know, people, everyone knows that you can make a choice to drink.
Over the who?
Yeah. But what are your other intoxicating lies then?
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree. I hope it's normalized as well. The first lie is I deserve a drink, which really is tied into that hustle culture. The second one is you don't have a drinking problem, where we label each other up into these boxes and we do this comparison lie. The third one is I can control my drinking. I mean, I don't think there's a person that hasn't tried moderation, right? Hasn't put up some guardrails and tried several times to make this work. And so that kind of speaks to that instant gratification cultural lie as well. Like, I got this. I can control this. The fourth one, which we spoke about, is that being sober is boring, and really speaks into that pro-drinking cultural lie that is BS. And the last one, which I really fell into, is the mommy wine culture. I mean, I bought the tea towels and the napkins and the t-shirts, and I thought it was so funny, and I would post on my Instagram, you know, if I go missing, post my face on the back of a wine bottle so my friends can find me. And I just drank all of those pro-drinking messages down. And the problem was that it became the societal permission slip to rest. I was doing, proving my worth, not taking care of myself, not even knowing what my own needs were. And it was a group of moms and a societal culture that said it's okay to say parenting is hard. In fact, wine is the solution to your parenting challenges. Come rest with a glass of wine. And boy, we are craving rest as busy working moms. And the alcohol industry knows it. They know we're tired, that we're vulnerable, and they're preying on it. They need us, right? And so it is just this horrible message to moms that this is the solution to your parenting challenges, when it only adds to your exhaustion, your depression, and your anxiety. And then in my next chapter, it's called Sip Happens. I actually had a wake up call, and we can go into that story if you want. But I started asking myself, what am I modeling to my kids? So in the mommy wine culture, when we drink and at our kids, we're saying, you're really hard. You're too much. Mommy needs wine. Mommy's Sani G juice, right? What message is that sending to our children? That you're too much, I can't handle you, and gosh, when life gets hard, have a drink. Is that really what we want our children to grow up believing and seeing? Because I know that it is not the way I want my kids to see me. And I have a whole chapter too about I got quarantined in Aruba. My daughter got COVID in Aruba and we were stuck there. My husband and son flew home and I had a lot of anxiety and I was at the airport trying to get tested and wasn't sure if she was going to test negative and if we were going to be stuck in this foreign country. To say that my parenting and my anxiety were off the charts is like an understatement. And my daughter watched me, right, be kind of messy about it, like worrying and checking my email and running to the lab and going back to the airport and trying to get all the things. But I didn't drink. And yes, it was a little bit messy, but I want her to see that life is hard and messy, but the beauty is in the mess, right? Like we can do hard things. And this is what it looks like. It's not always perfect. We are going to make mistakes. And that's okay. Because then if we model to check out or that it needs to look perfect, that's the wrong message to send to our kids as well.
I can't wait to read the rest of your book, Meg. Can't wait to read it all. Honestly, everything you're saying, it just resonates so much. I just want to go back to something you touched on before we got into the intoxicating lies. You talked about something that we mention a lot in our community and on the podcast, and I think it's fantastic for it to come from somebody else so people don't think, Shaz and Ben, they're always banging on about 100 days. They've always got about 100 days. we do though, don't we, Ben? We are like stuck records. People say, how long does it take? When will I feel the changes? And of course, it's different for everybody, but we swear by those triple figures because the alcohol is out of your system. Things in your life are starting to change. There's potentially a mindset shift thing going on as well. When people listen to podcasts like ours, when they hear these stories, I'm really aware, well, we both are, that people will be listening to this still drinking. People are listening to this just with the seeds planted thinking, oh God, no, it's too much. It's too much. I can't. Where do I start? Where do I start? People need to have hope. And it's all good and well us saying it. And, you know, with the crystal ball, here's the future. This is what it's going to look like. When you do get to that 90, 100 days, that triple figure milestone, it is a tipping point. Meg, just tell us a little bit more about that. Because, like I said, we go on about this all the time. And I'm really glad that you've brought it up. And I want you to share your experiences of that.
Yeah, I want to say just first and foremost that if you're having some drinking days in between this and not to beat yourself up, to lose the shame and stigma around it, if you're not giving up and you're starting over and you're, again, you don't have to go back to day one, but you're not giving up and you're getting curious. Like this is where I say, get into your journal and ask yourself, there's still an intoxicating lie that you believe somewhere lurking back in there, but this is either a reward or a crutch. And is it true? So, you know, like you said, everybody's journeys are unique and different. And sometimes it takes hundreds of times to kind of make it click. And that's okay, as long as you're not giving up on the journey, right? But at 100 days of being alcohol free, I had suffered from eczema with my whole life, which is an inflammation really, right? We know that alcohol is an inflammatory product. All of my eczema that I had suffered for years, my whole life, gone. My sleep, another thing I had really, you know, because the alcohol disrupts our sleep so much, I was thinking I needed the wine to go to bed. I had to kind of shut off the chatter of do more, do more. And all the things that I had to take care of. And so now the sleep is deep and restful and restorative. My conversations at work, oh my God, I was more clear. I could remember things that I had talked to my physicians about, and we were having much more meaningful conversations. My relationships with my friendships, I no longer wanted to sit around and gossip, right? I didn't care about having those surface relationships anymore. I wanted to have the deep philosophical, you know, meaningful conversations, and about that awe magic that we discussed earlier. Like, I love thinking about that kind of stuff, about how beautiful life truly is. And so, you know, my relationship with my husband, honestly, we were on two pages politically during COVID, during the presidential debate. There was a lot of arguing. If I had been drinking, I wonder, you know, if our marriage would have survived. So we were able to weather through some challenges together and go through this transition together, reconnect. And I think if alcohol were involved, I mean, my sister's a life coach. She's like, oh, I think you guys would have been divorced. You're just so hyper aware of everything around you, and you just go deeper within yourself and your loved ones and your family. And so everything's more meaningful, more purposeful, more intentional living. And you, this connection to your mind, body, and spirit is just so important that, you know, we're putting up boundaries to protect that. I mean, there's so many things that we could get into, but it's just this constant kind of every day, the alcohol-free journey gives an unexpected gift. And I just did a reel on Instagram about the biggest gift I got was that instead of, so there's a very great book called The Power of Ted, and he talks about the drama triangle, which is an upside down triangle. And in one corner is the victim, and the other corner is the, it's the prosecutor and the rescuer. I would bounce around that drama triangle while I was drinking nonstop. Woe is me. I deserve this. I deserve this drink. I'm a victim. I need to help this person. I need to rescue them. I need to take care of them. Rescuer, persecutor. Well, they didn't listen to me. How, you know, and gossip and judge. And I would just bounce around that drama triangle. And what I have learned on this journey is that I am the creator, and in a creation mode, as the creator, when these hard things come in and these triggers, I see them as invitations to get more curious to what they're there to teach me and to reveal to me. And then they flow through me easier. And it's called the empowerment triangle. And then it's up, it's right side up, where you shift out of victimhood and into the creator of your life. And when you do this on the alcohol-free journey, it is such a beautiful gift of life no longer happening at me, but happening for me.
I'm going to be honest with you, Meg. Yeah. I have heard about the triangle before, the drama triangle.
Yeah.
One of our community members, Claire, told me about it on a Zoom call. And I don't fully understand it. So I'm hoping that when I listen back to that in the edit, and the great thing about podcasts, you can just, if you're like me, you kind of like, that sounds really interesting, but I'm not quite there. Just click rewind, have a listen to it again. I kind of get it. It's about basically alcohol was kind of trapping you into, it's kind of forcing you down these personality traits almost.
Yeah,
it
keeps you stuck, like in that drama triangle.
Yes, okay.
So
yeah,
because you can't really feel in tune with your mind, body, and spirit, because you're kind of numbed out and you're checked out, you don't get into this creation mode of being the creator of your own life. You either go into a victimhood, woe is me, I deserve a drink, rescuer, oh, I need to help somebody and rescue them. And, you know, alcohol, like I said, could be the rescuer. And then it's this persecutor where you're judging because things aren't working out the way that you wanted them to a lot of the times, or you're having meaningless conversations. And so we tend to bounce around that when we're drinking. And when we're in the empowerment triangle, and I really encourage you to read this book. It's a tiny little book. You can read it in a day. It's called The Power of Ted by David Emerald. And I think that that's really what the alcohol-free journey is taking our power back from alcohol, seeing the beauty in it, seeing the lesson in it, like getting curious, is this issue that's coming up in my life, is it trying to teach me a spiritual lesson? Is it trying to reveal something within me that isn't healed? Or is it that I just need to show up for myself and just, you know, be like, okay, I can see that this is, you know, it might be grief, like, right? Like, it just is something where you have to hold space for yourself, and maybe other people around you can't, but you become the source of power. You are the empowerment. You are the creator versus the upside down drama triangle.
I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to read it. And that did help. Thank you.
Yeah.
I know that we're running out of time, but can I just quickly say before we go, Meg, I absolutely love the title, Intoxicating Lies. I think doesn't that sound like the latest Netflix blockbuster? You have trademarked it, haven't you?
I haven't trademarked it. And you know who came up with it? My husband.
It's so good. It's just like the new Netflix movie starring Nicole Kidman, Intoxicating Lies, coming out Tuesday. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's quite appropriate, isn't it? We started off the episode talking about your husband in a very different sort of scenario, and we've ended the episode talking about your husband as well. Meg, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. I think we've both really enjoyed that episode. We are out of time, sadly. Just before you go, Meg, remind people what your book's called, where they can find it, and tell us where we can find you on social media.
So the book is called Intoxicating Lies, One Woman's Journey to Freedom from Gray Area Drinking. You can find it anywhere books are sold. In Europe, it may be more on Amazon, but it is in some books in Europe, bookstores as well in Europe. My Instagram is attached to my Facebook, which is Intoxicating Lies Book, all one word on Instagram, Intoxicating Lies Book. And that's where I spend the most of my time.
Meg, thank it's you. Been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you guys so much. I enjoyed our conversation so much. It was a real honor to be with both of you today. Thank you.
Fabulous chat. Really enjoyed that. What a lovely, lovely woman. I can't believe we started talking off with Meg about sexy time. I mean, it was straight in there. Why am I saying that voice? Sexy time.
I don't know, but it's making me uncomfortable. More uncomfortable than the conversation.
I really
which I know
that
I led us into.
Yes, you did.
It's just kind of like, you know, you read a lot of these books and they're all fabulous, of course, but, you know, a lot of them kind of have similar stories and similar kind of ground covered. When I got to chapter 4 and started reading about Meg's sex life, or, well, you know, initially lack of when she went alcohol free, I was just like, wow, she's going there. She's talking about it. Cool.
Love it. You know, so I love everything about this podcast. It's the honesty, isn't it? It's always the honesty from the guests. It's absolutely fantastic. And I tell you what, we've got a whole stack of honesty, support, story sharing, inspiration, community, connection.
I know where you're going with this.
You know where I'm going with this? Guess where you'll find it? In our flipping Over the Influence community. It is so, so good. We've had a flurry of activity through the OTI virtual doors. It's busy in there.
Lots
of
new
chat,
members.
Lots of new members.
They want to post in our discussion forums. They want to join the Zoom calls. They want one-to-one messaging with other people who are alcohol-free. They want all of this connection. And I tell you what, it's so much easier doing something like this. Going alcohol-free is so much easier when you've got people there to help you out. You know, when you're not a sober lone ranger, when you're doing this with other people who know what it's like, know how great it can be, know how some days it can be tough. You know, it's just, it's there for you to use however you want to use it. It's just, it's really cool, isn't it, our community?
Yeah.
We're really proud of it.
Yeah.
And there's no obligation. Just give it a try. If it's not for you, no worries, but we hope it is.
Yeah, definitely. And big up your bad self if you've decided to say, I'm going to have a go. I'm going to try this. I'm going to see how it goes through summer, because having, you know, had many, many summers where I've been terribly, terribly drunk, and then a couple of summers where I've really, really struggled because I found it difficult. You know, for me, sunshine was a huge trigger for so long. No longer. It's passed. It's all okay now. But you can feel like you're on your own. Like Ben said there, the sober Lone Ranger, when everybody else is going to a barbecue, everybody else is going to a beer garden, everybody else is going for drinks at someone's house, whatever it might be. If you're part of this community, you are never on your own. There'll be somebody that's either been where you are or experiencing exactly the same as you. Connection. Connection is the absolute game changer. It could be the missing piece of your alcohol-free jigsaw this summer. And if you want any more info about what we do, have a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. Or if you want a bit of an email chat with me, absolutely no problem. I've been doing it all week this week, actually, answering DMs and emails and messages. People have got what they think are daft questions. They are not daft questions. We are here to answer any question, whatever it might be. Send me an email direct, Sharon at overtheinfluence.co.uk. Now I'm going to go and sit in my garden with my new barbecue on my new garden cushions and have an AF cider in the sunshine. I realise I sound like an absolute middle-aged menopausal woman that's lost the plot, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you for listening. Ben, stop laughing. Goodbye.